welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's back to the rock and roll with one of the greatest guitarists in the world today, and he's going to be on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rage at C-Part de, leaving in just about 10 days or so. It's going to be a great time. We are talking about Jared James Nichols. He's toured with Fozzy in Canada last year. He toured with Fozzy at the Unleashed in the West tour a few months ago. Great guy, great rock and roll band, great guitar player. He's making his Talk is Jericho debut, and you're going to find out why everybody from Zakk Wylde to John Five to Lynyrd Skynyrd loves some Jared James. Jared talks about how he got playing guitar, why he prefers to play without a pick, super original there, the big break that Skynyrd gave him, what it was like growing up in the small Wisconsin town where the late, great Stevie Ray Vaughan played his last show and ultimately died just miles from where Jared grew up. That's kind of a little bit of a reincarnation type thing. But like I said, Jared's doing shows on the cruise, and then he's taking his power trio blues rock band on the road in Europe. His European tour launches February 25th in the UK. All the dates and ticket information are on his Facebook page. Just search Jared James Nichols. All right, here we go. JJN right here on TIJ starting now. All right, so we are currently on tour. We're in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and had a couple awesome tours with Jared James Nichols and his band of merry men. And it's cool to see how much of a buzz you have going even since we toured Canada in December.
Yeah.
You just keep going and going and going.
It's cool for me. I mean, shoot, to be back out with you guys, you know, this is the thing for us. And if anyone doesn't know, I front a three-piece blues rock power trio. We've been touring since we met.
Right.
We've been on the road. And almost a year later now, hooking back up. It's amazing.
It's been nonstop for you. Like, you haven't
nonstop,
not
dude,
been on tour.
Since we met and since we hooked up, I released a guitar with Gibson and Epiphone. I released an amp with Blackstar, and I did basically about 8 weeks in the States, and then I went over to Europe, and I did like 100 days in Europe. It was insane.
In a row?
Yeah.
You did 3 months in Europe? How was that for you?
It was insane. I was ready to come home, though.
Yeah.
We went all the way to like Egypt, Turkey, Dubai.
Wow.
Yeah.
It seems like almost like, and I'm sure you'll tell me the whole tale, but like you're an overnight sensation.
Ugh.
Like to get all of those places in such a short period of time. Because
mm-hmm.
I only heard about you a few years ago
yeah.
when you toured with Saxon and UFO.
Yes.
Because you see, you know, we've toured with Saxon. We always enjoy with those guys. So when I see them coming over, I always check out who they're out with.
Yep.
And I'd never heard of your name before.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this guy? So you Google it and you look exactly the same outfit.
I'm wearing the same clothes, yeah.
But I mean, that was only a few years ago, and that's the first that I'd ever really heard of you.
Yes. Well, I kind of hit a really good stride. So check this out. We did what everyone did, right? We started in the van, the three of us, booking our own shows. We started up the West Coast, right? Because we were living in LA. And we'd say, okay, right, we need to do a show in LA. We'd do San Francisco. We'd go to Portland, Seattle. And we would book them on our own if they worked or not. You know, that was a whole other story. But
how do you book your own shows?
Just start cold calling venues,
really?
You know, bars that have music. And so the lucky break we got was I got us a gig at Sturgis. And
right, the big bike rally.
Yeah, we did the rally, but we were playing in the parking lot. So we were playing in the parking lot. And when we started our set, no one was there. You know, like bikes would rip by. And we played for like 4 hours. So this parking lot gig, Skynyrd was playing the same day. And their tour manager was like, happened to be going by in a golf cart, and he saw us playing, and he heard us jamming. And next thing you know, I see Ricky Medlock from Skynyrd, and then Gary Rossington. And we connected. And then that night on the main stage, those guys were all jamming. We were hanging out. And I was like, man, this is so cool. And that guy, about 3 weeks later, hit me up. We connected with numbers. And he goes, hey, man, we're doing some shows in Europe. Maybe you should open them.
Wow, for Skynyrd.
For Skynyrd, yeah.
So, that's crazy.
So we'd been like trudging along, doing our thing, and this would have been in 2015. And before I knew it, we booked a European tour with 4 shows with Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Wow.
Arenas. And I was like, oh man, what is happening, right? It was amazing. So we did these 4 shows, and on the last show, we were in Germany, in Ludwigsburg, And they're like, man, come jam with us. So I jammed Sweet Home Alabama. There was like 17,000 people. And I was like, I just went from playing in the parking lot at Sturgis,
yeah.
You know? But the thing is, and you know this, you know, you're one of the hardest working dudes I've ever met. You just don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And when a little spark happens, you just keep pushing, right?
Right.
So like this whole year, we haven't been off the road. I've been off the road for less than 2 weeks this whole year. Just because, you know, we get the offers, we just keep going, man.
Well, the thing is too, like your genre of music, like you talk about being a three-piece blues, the famous blues trio from Cream to Hendrix to Stevie Ray Vaughan to you name it. It's not a huge market, and you've really been able to break into that market. But also, too, you're very versatile where you could play with Skynyrd, you could play with Fozzy, you could play with Zach or Saxon, and it works because it's just good rock and roll.
Yeah, I feel really lucky about that, too. You know, that's the thing, though. A lot of people would be like, oh, this dude, he's a blues guy, you know? And then we're playing, like, we tour with Zach Wilde or, you know, touring with you guys.
Right.
And it's so awesome because I feel like now especially, it's not so, you know, boxed in anymore, right. You know? And a guy like me can go and play, you know, we can tour with you guys or we go do Vakken or whatever metal festivals. Mm. And then we're going to go on, you know, the Jericho Cruise. And then I go play with Bonamassa or I go jam with some blues guys. And it's kind of like it's all in the same now.
It's party music to me. That's why, like, whenever we put together our packages, we're, you know, basically a party band. It's a heavy band, but we want people to have a great time. And I want the whole package from the first band to the last band. This tour is just the two of us. Which yes. I love. But I want that vibe. And that's why it works, because rock and roll fans, heavy metal fans just want to have a good time.
100%, man. And I think now more than ever, they need that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
The genres need it. The music, the rock in general needs that. And I feel like with you guys touring with this, but all these bands that I love, and you know, we're just trying to breathe new air into what we love. Mm-hmm. And just keep it pushing, man. Keep it partying.
So where are you from?
Wisconsin.
Whereabouts?
Eh? East Troy, right? 30 miles south of Milwaukee.
So where, like, how did you basically get started, like when you started playing guitar? Because you also play without a pick,
mm-hmm.
which to me, the only other person I've ever seen, I'm sure there's a lot, but Lindsey Buckingham,
yep.
instantly pops into mind.
Yep.
What was your, who were your influences, and how did you get into playing guitar?
So I grew up in like an unincorporated town, right? So that like the nearest real town we used to ride our bikes to, it was 7 miles away.
Wow.
Yeah, dude.
And we so used to unincorporated. Like, it's not even a real.
It's not even a town. Yeah, there's nothing there.
There's no mayor.
It just
or whatever.
Said like Spring Prairie, unincorporated. There's no business. There's nothing.
Wow.
Funny story. Where I got to remember the guy's name, Ginger Beaumont, was a baseball player. He was the first guy to hit in the first World Series ever for the Yankees.
Oh wow.
He lived on the property where my parents' house was. Baseball diamond he'd set up. So it was in the middle of nowhere though.
Right.
So anyways.
Field of dreams.
The field of dreams. Dude, growing up in Wisconsin for me was like growing up like 30 years behind. So like, it was great because I was hearing like classic rock on the radio and I was like, man, I didn't think about it like, oh, this was my parents' music or this was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just like Iron Maiden, Metallica, like, you know, you'd hear like Master of Puppets and it was like, it was just recorded yesterday.
Right.
You know, I'd hear Pink Floyd or Zeppelin or any of this stuff. And it was like, it was all new to me. There was no one there being like, oh dude, that's so old. So I was playing like football and doing the sports
thing. 'Cause
you're
a big guy.
Yes.
What are you, 6'4"?
6'4".
6'4",
yeah. Yeah. So I was doing sports, but all my buddies, they started like slowly shifting towards music. And I remember we were in eighth grade and we went to the Battle of the Bands for the high school. And I saw like this junior band, they're juniors, and they were playing Sweet Leaf by Sabbath. And these dudes all had like long hair and they were all jamming and stuff. And I was like, whoa, like look at those guys, they're in a band. I was like, I wanna do that.
And this is like in the 2000s, right?
Yeah, this was 2000.
Gotcha.
Four?
Gotcha.
So it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, I'm gonna be the drummer. Because, you know, every time I'd listen to, like, the good stuff, I'd always want to play, like, the Bill Ward drum fills or when I hear Rush, whatever. And I get a drum set from my brother's buddy, and I bring it home. My dad's a construction worker. So he comes home, and I'm bam, bam, you know, trying to learn. And he walks in the basement. He's like, hell no, dude. There's no way. And I had the drums for, like, a week, but it was apparent, like, I wasn't going to be able to play them at home. So He goes, why don't you get a guitar? You can take it with you. All right. So I was like, all right, I'll try guitar, but everyone plays guitar. I don't want to play guitar. And I'm a lefty. So I pick up a righty upside down. And I remember they said, well, if you could learn like a riff, we'll get you an electric. Because I was like, if I'm going to play guitar, it's not going to be an acoustic, man. It's got to be an electric. So he said, if you learn a riff, we'll get you a real electric guitar with an amp. Within 10 minutes, dude, I had down, of course, Smoke on the Water, but Electric Funeral by Black Sabbath.
Oh, that's
it. Right? And I walk out, and I could see his face. He was like, you did that, you know? And I was like, yeah, that's my first riff. I was like, I'm going to go learn some more. So like 2 days later, I get an electric guitar, like a cheap Les Paul copy, whatever.
Right.
And I brought it home, and I'm looking at this little amp, and it was like on the clean tone. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound like Jimmy Page. And I'm like trying to turn it up and it just didn't sound right. And then there was a little button and it said like distortion. And I clicked that and all of a sudden it was like, you know, yes. Yeah. And then that was when I knew, I was like, that's the sound, that is freedom. And I just started playing and learning riffs. And I was like, yes, this is what I want to do. Flash forward a week later, my mom takes me to an open blues jam. She goes, you have to go see real musicians play. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. I was like, but I'm like 15 years old. I don't know anything. So we go like 45 minutes from my house. And it was this place called the Silver Moon. And they had a Sunday blues jam. We get out of the car and I hear like a harmonica, like, wah! You know, and we walk in and it's like a stone cold blues place. We go up to the bar. And she goes, oh, can we get some food menus, blah, blah, blah. And the guy's like, yeah, sure. She goes, you know, my son plays guitar. He's really good. He'd like to get on stage with the band.
Oh, jeez.
And I like kick her under the table. I was like, what are you doing? Like, I didn't know anything.
I played for a week. Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, sure. No problem. We'll get him up. So I'm sitting there freaking out. And I was like, well, I didn't bring my guitar. I can't play. And he goes, we got an old guitar in the back. So he brings out this guitar. And I remember right before I got on stage, I went into the bathroom, washing my hands. I'm like, just stalling. And this old big blues dude comes up behind me, goes, you look scared, boy. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, think about it like this. It's like swimming. When you jump in the water, you're either going to figure it out or you're going to float to the bottom and die. So I get on stage, dude, and I'm so nervous. And they say, we're playing a blues in E. And the only thing I knew about blues in E was that the low string was called an E string. So I was like, all right. So he starts playing. I'm going dun, dun, dun. And he goes to an A. And I was like, oh, that's the next string. So I go to that one, you know? And then, so he's calling out these chords and I'm just hitting one string. And then he looks at me, he goes, take a solo, take a solo. So I go up and I know that everything starts over at the 12th fret. So I go up there and I do the same thing. But when I was done with my solo, people started clapping. I was like 10 feet tall and bulletproof, dude.
Wow.
Like that was it. I was hooked. I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to play blues. Then I'm asking the guy after, I'm like, who should I listen to? He goes, oh, Junior, you got a long way to go, blah, blah, blah. He's like, you ever hear of Stevie Ray Vaughan? I was like, kinda. He goes, go watch Stevie Ray Vaughan. So I go to Walmart and they have the Live at the Elma Combo tape.
The classic.
I put it in. That was it, dude.
His voice, his playing, he's obviously, we know Stevie Ray's white, but he played so much like a black dude and had all of that vibe and all of that power.
All of it, dude.
Still the best.
The package.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing, the town that I grew up in, the unincorporated town, there's a music theater there called Alpine Valley. That's where he died.
Right.
Yes. He died on the same street as I was growing up.
You're kidding me.
No, man.
He crashed in a suburban area?
Yes. No, it wasn't even a suburban area. Really, it was so it's like a man-made ski hill, and then they made this kind of amphitheater. And Stevie played his last show there with Clapton, Buddy Guy,
right.
Jimmy Vaughn. And he got in Clapton's helicopter after the show, and it was so foggy. Dude, that chopper went up. It hadn't even been up maybe 100 feet, and it hit the man-made ski hill and went down.
No way. No
yeah.
kidding. Did so, you know about that when it happened? Is that how you kind of heard
well,
Stevie?
I was only like, that's right.
Yeah.
But one of my uncles was a first responder. My brother is actually a sheriff in the town. And I remember he pulled up Stephen Ray Vaughn, like on the computer in the car, had all his details, you know, the death report, everything.
Wow.
It's just crazy because all of a sudden here I am trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. I get thrown at this blues jam and I'm like, this is amazing. I'd never had that feeling, right? It's like going on stage or being in that position. And then I'm watching this dude, Stevie Ray Vaughan, play. And I'm like, it's like all being right in front of me, you know? And then they're like, well, you know, he died at Alpine right there, you know? And it was like, I'm like, man. And then I just got sucked in, dude. I was that kid like 12 hours a day.
Playing. Is that why you went by Jared James Nichols?
Of course, dude. Yeah. Stevie had three names.
Yeah, right.
A lot of people there, they always say that. They're like, I remember the first gig I booked under my own name. I was like, I got to have three names. Jared James Nichols. That's it.
Only blues guys and serial killers. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how you started playing without a pick, like Lindsey Buckingham. Very rare for guys to do that. Before we do, it is a new year and probably a great time to do a little closet cleaning. Make room for all the cool new stuff you got for Christmas. And if you're anything like me and my family, then I know you got a bunch of stuff in your home that's in great shape, but you just don't use it anymore. So don't let it waste your space and take up a much needed room in your house. Just sell it on Mercari. Now, Mercari is the selling app that makes selling almost anything fast and easy. Just gather up all the stuff that you don't use anymore, you know, that smartphone or tablet just sitting in a drawer, or maybe the sports gear that your kids outgrew, or the jeans that you only wore once. Whatever you have hiding in the back of your closet, you just gather it all up, take a few pictures, add a description, and list it on Mercari. And in just a few minutes, your items are connected to millions of buyers on the app. Mercari will even email you a shipping label when your item sells. How cool is that? Everything ships, so you don't have to worry about awkward meetings with strangers. The Mercari app has over 500,000 reviews on the App Store with an average 4.8 star rating. So why not give it a try? Ring in the new year with less stuff in your home and more money in your pocket. I'm talking about Mercari. That's M-E-R-C-A-R-I. Mercari is the selling app that you need to check out today. How did it come about for you to start playing without a pick?
So when I first started playing, man, for years I played with a pick, right? But since I'm a lefty, it never felt like I was at home with it. I always struggled to be like articulate. Like I try and play like heavier, faster stuff and it never worked. But I knew like a lot of the blues guys and a lot of that thing, they would use their fingers to get different sounds. And I remember when I tried it, I was like, dude, this is the sound I'm looking for. It's almost like a more intimate feeling. Because like with your fretting hand, there's nothing blocking you in the strings. I felt the same with my picking. Mm. And it opened up a whole new kind of door. And it was funny because I only did it for myself. I never thought about it like it was going to be a thing. And then like when I moved to LA and I was playing, they're like, hey, you're the no pick guy. And I'm like, what? And it took on a life of its own. But the one good thing about it is guitar players always try and we always try and find sounds, find tones and stuff. For me, I did that as a personal thing and it totally changed like the course of my playing, the sound, the feel, all of it. And I think it brought me closer to what I love, which is great.
So you mentioned moving to LA. So did you build up kind of a local, a local following for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And then decide I got to go bigger?
Dude, does everyone know that we're on the road day five? We're both coughing.
I know, right? I actually just drank some coffee and it went down the wrong,
there it is.
Wrong pipes.
Yeah, no. So when I moved to LA,
what made you want to move to LA?
Well, I felt like I had already achieved by the time I was like 18, 19, everything I could in the region. I'd played like Summerfest and the Harley rallies and, you know, I'd done all those big gigs there.
Did you have people like Jared James Nichols?
Yeah, dude. And it was to the point though, where I was like, what's next? What else can I do here? How am I going to build this? And I remember I was sitting there with my mom, God bless her. And she goes, maybe you need to move somewhere and try to go to like a real city to play. And it was like a conscious decision. And I was like, yeah, where would I go? I live in Wisconsin. Like I live in the country. Like, and we both said, we were like, what about LA? So picture the kid getting off the bus, dude, with like no money, a guitar.
The literal story.
In Hollywood. I remember.
Did you take a bus?
No, I didn't take a bus, but we rented a little U-Haul van. Because I had like a bed, my guitars.
Yeah.
And I remember going to Hollywood. The first thing that happened when I got out of the U-Haul, it was like dusk. And all of a sudden I hear bang, bang, bang. And I was like, what was that? My dad goes, I think that was gunshots. And then there was, you know, just, it was classic.
Yeah.
And I remember when I moved there, though, things got totally real. It was like, I just submerged myself. I went from being the big fish in the small pond to being the minnow in the ocean.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. And I started back over. And in one way, it was so like healthy for me to like go there and be humbled constantly. You know, it's like I had to start over.
What was your plan of attack? Like, how do you start getting your name out there?
Well, this is what happened. My plan of attack was I'll play anywhere for anyone at any time.
And this is just you on your own.
Me on my own.
Yeah.
Yep. Me on my own. So after like 2 weeks of living in LA, I was at Guitar Center, right? And I saw a flyer for a Les Paul tribute contest. And it said, winner wins a new Gibson Les Paul featuring Guitar Player Magazine, a year supply of guitar strings. And I was like, I'm totally signing up. So you had to send in like a demo submission. And dude, this was in 2011. So I really didn't have anything. So I sent them a video of me playing back in Wisconsin. And I was like, man, I hope this works to get in. I got in. So there was 30 guys for this contest, right? The judges were like Carl Verheyen, Paul Gilbert, like
Mike. Really?
Like all,
big time guys.
Yeah. And I show up and I got my guitar and I walk in the backstage, man. And it's like Mr. Olympia for guitar. Everyone's, you know, there's one guy with like an acoustic, like tapping and, you know, like, I'm like, oh, where am I? So I show up and they were like, okay, we got to pick numbers for who goes where. Got to pick them out of a hat.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay. I was the first to pick. I picked 30. So I'm the last guy. So I got to sit back there for like 2 hours. It was like torture listening to all these guys go. So it was the Les Paul tribute contest. That's another weird thing about my story is I never knew my grandpa, but he knew Les Paul. There were kids at the same time, Waukesha, wow. Wisconsin. Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
A lot. You were destined to be.
No, I don't know if I was destined or I got lucky.
Yeah.
But it was a Les Paul tribute. So I was like, man, I'm going to go do my blues thing, but then I'm going to play a Les Paul song at the end, like a little melody. So we go and I go up and I play and I'm doing my thing. And I like had the room because everyone was playing super fast, super crazy stuff. And then I went up there and I just was playing some serious blues stuff. And then I go into the Les Paul thing and everyone loved it. And I was like, man, maybe I did pretty good. Top three. That'd be amazing. So they bring everyone out on stage. They got the guitar. Everyone's there ready to like, you know.
Yeah.
And they said, and the winner is Jared Nichols, you know. And I'm like, holy crap, right? So I won. And that moment was like the moment that propelled everything. One of the guys that was a judge, his name's Phil, and he owns a studio in LA called Swing House. So we're at this dinner afterwards, and he goes, hey, man, when can I hear your band? I was like, dude, I just moved here. I don't have one. He goes, do you sing? I was like, a little bit. I try and sing like Steve Ray, you know?
Yeah.
And he goes, do you have songs? I'm like, not really, no. And he goes, well, check this out. He goes, I got a studio here in Hollywood. Why don't you get some guys, come over, and you can come and jam. Really? Yeah. He goes, come for a tour next week. So I go and meet with him, and the first person I see when I'm walking in is Manson, Marilyn Manson. And I was like, whoa. Like, and it was a real studio. Mm. And I was like, I can come in here and play? He's like, yeah, come in on Sunday, you know, come in the off times. So lo and behold, I get Dennis, who's the drummer now, and his Swedish buddy, Eric. I was like, guys.
Where'd you see them?
I saw him at the school there, Musicians Institute.
Oh. Okay.
They were studying there, and I met him there.
Were you studying there too?
I went there for 6 months.
Man. Gotcha.
Yeah. So I meet them, and we go to this studio, and we start jamming. And this Phil guy is like, come back whenever you want, you know. So we keep going back. And then he goes, man, you guys are sounding pretty good. We should get you a gig. So he got us a gig at the Viper Room.
Wow.
Like opening on a Monday.
Nice.
We go to the Viper Room and the booker there, Dale, she loves us. She goes, why don't you guys play every Monday for the next month? So we start playing there every Monday for the next month. And then we get a gig. Where did we get a gig? Somewhere. Oh, it was that Stagecoach Country Music Festival. We got a gig like at an after party. So we drove all the way out there from LA to play for free to like five people.
Right.
But we kept going and going. And organically, this guy, Phil, like I'd get a gig and he'd be like, oh, here's the gear. Or, you know, here's a van. And now.
He believed in you.
Yeah. And now we've built this whole thing up from there to now, which is 8 years later.
So amazing, though. I love hearing kind of how it's... I have to tell this quick story. When I talked to Vivian Campbell on the show, he said when Dio was auditioning guitar players, obviously it's 1982 LA, everybody was coming out just shredding.
Right.
And he said he did all of his shredding stuff. And then Dio said, well, what else can you do? He's like, well, all my tricks are gone. So I just started playing Chuck Berry riffs. And Dio said afterwards, that's when I knew you got the gig. It wasn't about this. It was about your feel and your... And just like you said with playing the Les Paul song.
Yeah.
You did exactly opposite of what every single guy did, which has also helped you kind of stand out to this day where we're here.
Yeah. And I think that's been... the thing is, I never... I just always care more about the feel of the music and about the vibe and the soul behind it. I was never like trying to play fast or like, you know, like a competition guy. Like, although lo and behold, the competition was the, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But when I thought about guitar, I thought like Stevie, the blues guys, like they were feeling it. Like, I want to feel everything, you know, and I want that vibe. And when I moved to LA, I kind of looked around and I went, man, there's not a lot of guys doing that.
Right.
Especially young guys.
Yeah.
It was almost as if the feel was like, yeah, whatever. You know, we're interested in who's going to play the fastest or, you know, who's the heaviest guitar player. And for me, it was like, no, man, I don't want to do that. And I stuck out like a sore thumb. And I think that was one of the reasons.
Yeah. You did something different.
Yeah.
You know, you said something earlier. It needs to be a title of a song. 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
That's it, dude.
If that's not a blues song, I don't know what
that's
is.
That's it. Right? Yeah, for sure.
So tell me about the first tour that you had.
Okay, the first tour. So the first real tour that we had, because we did all these little runs. Like, we do a weekend run. Like I was saying, like, we'd go to Vegas and then to San Diego in LA, and we'd play, like, these places. Dude, we used to play at, like, retirement homes.
What?
I'm not even joking. Like, wow. we'd get booked by a guy that would hit me up in Indiana and be like, hey, man, I want to book you 4 shows. And this was, like, early days, like, Facebook style. It's like, yeah, that'd be great. He goes, okay, here's the first place. We played a place once in Greenfield, Indiana, called Carla's Country Cafe. It was a cafe inside of a retirement home. Check this out. We show up, 3 dudes, and we're listening to like Hendrix. You know, we're bombing in this van. We show up, dude, and we get there, and it's all like 85 plus.
Wow.
And we show up, and they're like, yeah, you guys can set up in the corner. And we're in like a retirement home, and she introduces us and she says, this is James Jared, and he's here to play you guys some songs, and anything you request, he's going to play for you.
Jeez Louise.
So the first thing someone says, play Johnny Cash. It was like Blues Brothers on the weirdest, horrible level, dude.
Did you play Johnny Cash?
Yeah, we did the worst version of, what's the, what?
Ghost Ride.
Ring of Fire.
Yeah.
We'd play anywhere, man.
Did you get a good reaction at the retirement home?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They gave us pie afterwards. I swear to God. Dude, Dennis, who's a drummer still now, who's been through all this stuff with me, he's looking at me and he's got the biggest grin on his face at the retirement home. And I was like, and we took a pie to go. It was so stupid, dude.
That's great, though, man.
It was hilarious.
Oh, that's great. So you were just basically playing anywhere that you could go.
Yeah, and then we got this message on Facebook from a guy in the Netherlands. And he said, hey, man, I love what you do. Blues rock forever. I have a company with vans and gear, and I want to book you a tour in Europe. This was at the beginning of 2014. We're like, yeah, that'd be cool. So we actually figure it out, and we buy tickets to Europe. Totally asked my mom for money. You know, like,
yeah,
classic. We go to Europe, right? And we meet this guy at the airport. He's booked us now like 34 shows in like 36 days. We show up and the first show's in Belgium at this place called Bada Bang. We walk in and it's like a coffee bar, right? But with a little stage. And we walk in and he's like, oh yeah, you know, there's a green room upstairs. You guys can hang out till the show. And we're in this green room and we look down and there's a line of people to come in this cafe to watch us play. And we're like, what are all these people doing here? He's like, oh, they're here to see you. Blues rock, man, you know? And we're like, okay, so we play, and the place is packed. And over there, like, they didn't get the memo that, you know, we were playing to nobody at a retirement home. So all of a sudden, we did this crazy awesome tour across Europe, 34 shows. And the guy goes, when do you want to do the next one? We're like, let's set it up.
So now you're making some money too, right?
Yeah, it went so well. It was like one of those situations when I think back at it, you know, like you always have to just keep taking risks no matter what. That's the only that's the only way I ever see like progress. It's like when you go out of your element, you're like, yeah, let's do this. Mm-hmm. So we go over to Europe, three dudes, and we're just like, we don't know if we're going to come back a lot, whatever.
Right.
We're going to do it. And we did it, and it was awesome. And then flash forward, that was when the Skinner thing happened. A few months later, we're in the parking lot. And I said, they said, well, what are you doing? Where are you touring? I was like, well, we just did this awesome Europe tour.
Yeah.
And then they say, well, we're going to Europe. You should do some shows with us.
And people in Europe love blues rock, which I want to talk more about. And we'll do that after I tell you where my quip was last week in Tokyo, Japan. That's right. My quip went with me to Tokyo for Wrestle Kingdom 14. Had my pearly whites looking shiny and bright in the ring for my big victory over Hiroshi Tanahashi at the Tokyo Dome. What a great match that was. Wow. He's such a good performer. I really love working with Tana. And I don't go anywhere without my quip electric toothbrush as well, even when I go to Japan, because quip makes my teeth and mouth happy and my dentist happy as well. It also makes it super easy for me to brush for 2 minutes twice a day. Quip's built-in timer and 30-second pulses guide your brushing to ensure a full and even clean. Quip also offers refillable floss that comes with pre-marked string to help you just enough. And of course, Quip delivers new brush heads, floss, and even their anti-cavity toothpaste right to your front door. So join over 3 million healthy mouths and get Quip today, starting at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/Jericho right now, you'll get your first refill for free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/Jericho. That's getquip.com/Jericho. Start the new year with a clean, healthy mouth and a bright white smile. Getquip.com/Jericho. Quip.com/Jericho. Quip, the good habits company. Oh, yeah.
Obviously, blues rock is such an American thing and also a very British thing via America. But why so popular? Like you mentioned Belgium, you said Egypt. Like, what is it about your sound that translates to a European audience?
Well, the funny thing, the best compliment I ever got, you'll laugh at this, is a guy comes up to me and he goes, Jared, when I hear you play, it's like eagles fly out of your speakers. And I was like, what? I think that, first off, I really truly believe that guitar, rock and roll, blues rock, this whole thing that we love is timeless.
Yeah.
I really do believe that.
I agree with you.
You know, no matter how many times, you and I sitting in the bus listening to stuff.
Yeah.
It's timeless, man. And I feel like the rest of the world, they have such an appreciation for it. You know, in America, I feel like they got jaded real quick. Mm. Especially with blues rock stuff, because it was like, yeah, you go to any club in the South, there's some guy playing Pride and Joy or Texas
Flood. Right.
But I think that over there, there's more of an appreciation for all arts. And the thing that I noticed especially is rock and roll and guitar. To them, it is as fresh as anything, and they love it. Now, I don't know exactly why, but they love it. Here I am in Cairo, or I'm in Dubai. And in Cairo, we had like, it was just me showing my guitar and amp, doing a jam with like local musicians there. There was over 500 people, dude.
Wow.
They showed up because there was an American blues rock guitar player there. I think a lot of these places too, they just are, you know, no one goes there sometimes. So it's like when this stuff comes, it's like, it's a big deal.
But like you said, it's universally translates. Like if you're at a party, I always say this, and you have black dudes, white dudes, hot chicks, young chicks, old chicks, whoever. If you took a cross section and you were trying to figure out what music to put on, if you put on AC/DC, everyone would be into it.
It'd work.
You know, if you went to a Vegas pool, like the Encore pool with all the players that rave shit, if you put AC/DC on, people have just as much fun. Because that translates, it's just four on the floor blues, rock and roll.
And the more I play and the more I travel and, you know, jamming with like you guys, like, most people would think to themselves, you know, Fozzie, me opening for Fozzie, they're like, how does that work? And I'm like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Because Fozzie fans totally get it.
Right.
They get it because it's not so cut and dry anymore. It's like,
yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say?
It's like I said, it's a party sound, but it's great guitar. Great, like, your voice is killer too, man. Like, I was saying to, who was I talking to? Gary Holt.
Oh, yeah.
He's a big fan of yours. Gary, great guy.
Great guy.
And, we were just talking. I said, he's like a combination of Stevie Ray and Zach with vocals of Doug Pinnick from King's X.
I love that, dude.
Like, you really have that soulful voice, too. And you're funny because you said, like, when someone asks you if you sing, you said a little bit. Like,
yeah,
you have to sing if you're a blues man.
That was the thing, too. When I started the trio, you know, where I was like, I want to be in a trio. And it's like, why? Clapton, Jimmy, all of Stevie my heroes. Ray, yeah.
And even you go into Rush and the Police, and yeah, like, all great bands are so trios. Yeah.
And then they go, well, who's going to sing? And I'm like, I have to sing.
Yeah, you have to.
I have to.
It wouldn't be the same if you didn't.
No, it would not. And I think also another thing is, like, it's just so great for me to be able to travel and, like, tour with you guys and just keep pushing it forward, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, when I meet people, it's not as if they look at us or look at me like I'm trying to be someone from the 70s or something, you know? It's like, we're trying to just do it right now. It's like I said, there's a timeless element to all this stuff. And I'm just happy to be out playing it.
Did you, when you talked about playing with Skynyrd, did you get a chance to talk to Gary and Ricky?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Dude, Gary's daughter's on tour with him, right?
Singing?
No, just like helping. Gotcha. And she goes, my dad won't stop watching your videos in the bus.
That's
when
cool.
We're over there. And I'm like, really? And then I see him, and he's like, you did this one thing, man. And I'm thinking to myself, I've been in a lot of situations like that where it's like heroes, genuine heroes. And I'm sitting there showing Gary Rossington how I played this lick. And you're like, is this real life?
Yeah,
you know?
That's his word.
That's another thing that has genuinely blown my mind. Even for me sitting here with you as a young budding wrestling fan, dude, that was my era, dude.
That's cool, man, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I get to meet and see and be around all these people that I've respected my whole life. Or heroes, you know.
Tell us who just gave you a call the other day.
Yeah. Love them, hate them, whatever you guys want.
I love them, so.
Yes. Yeah. Ted Nugent. I wake up on the bus the other morning, and I have about 6 text messages. And it said, hey, man, I just gave Ted Nugent your number. And then my manager, Ted Nugent's calling you. And then I have like 2 missed calls from an unknown number or whatever, you know. And I'm like, what is it? I'm just trying to wake up and wrap my head around it. What is happening? Who?
Yeah, yeah,
what?
Yeah, yeah. The Ted Nugent?
The Ted Nugent.
Is this Edward Nugent, a bill collector?
Dude. Yeah, exactly. The funny part is when we play and when we're on tour, everyone comes up to me, has anyone ever told you you look like Ted Nugent? No, never heard it, you know? And
1978 Ted
exactly.
Nugent.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's funny because I've been compared to Ted every day since I've been playing, and it's awesome. And it even went to the point when we were like touring with Zach, like we would do Stranglehold in its entirety just to be like, you know what?
Embrace it.
Yeah. So the other day we're in San Diego, you guys are sound checking, and I get a call, unknown number. And hello? Hey, I'm looking for Jared James Nichols. This is Uncle Ted. And I'm just like, holy crap. And he goes, I just want to salute you for waving the rock and roll flag for everyone. He goes, all of us that have been there, who are there, who are going to be there. And we talked for like an hour.
That's great.
And it was awesome. And he was so cool. And like, he's like, I'm sitting here right now with my Gibson Birdland. And I just kept thinking to myself, man, some of these moments, like, money can't buy. Like these are things I'll remember forever.
Yeah.
Like when I was at that studio in Hollywood, we're jamming in there one night. Lo and behold, the door opens and it was late at night. And I hear, who the hell are you? And I was like, who is that? Steven Tyler. And he goes, hey, man, you know, we're jamming. He's talking, whatever. And he goes, hey, we're making a record in the back. You should come hang out. And I hung out with Aerosmith for like 3 months, dude. Sitting there with, you know, Joe Perry.
But they would respect you because they're a blues band, too.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's the common thread, I feel like, between all of us. Is first off the love of the music, and then the, you know, the respect that we're still here today, like just kicking it.
So you're hanging out for 3 months for Aerosmith. There must be some stories from that.
Dude, all the stories. Well, the best part for me was I had like zero money. So Steven would just say, yeah, come to the studio, man. The studio would be open at like 11:30 in the morning till about 3 at night. I'd go there all day. I'd eat, you know what I mean? There. Like and hang out. And I was like a fly on the wall. Literally watching him make the record. That was a Music from Another Dimension record. And stories, yeah, Steven, kicking my butt on vocals and, you know, sing it like this, sing it like that, you know? And, you know, sitting there with Joe Perry and then having Joe loan me guitars. I didn't have any good guitar. You know, I had nothing. All of a sudden, play this one. Old Les Paul, stuff like that. And then flash forward, meeting one of Joe's sons, Tony. And he's right around my age. And we made my last record at Johnny Depp's house.
No kidding.
Through the whole connection. You know, it's like this whole... It's like I can literally go back and be like, yeah, that moment when I met him, you know, we sparked a friendship and that took us here or that, you know? And I just feel like none of this would have happened if I wouldn't have gotten in that car from Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, that's the truth.
Right? It's probably like you with everything.
I left my house in Winnipeg to drive to Calgary for wrestling school at 19, and it sucked. Like, I had no... You leave your whole friends, your whole family everything. Behind. I didn't know anyone in Calgary. First day, you meet a bunch of, you know, miscreants that are in this wrestling camp, and you're on your own, kid.
Yep.
The world doesn't owe you a damn thing.
That's right.
But if you want to go and make this happen, you got to take a chance.
And I think that... everyone always, you know, because like you said, there's a buzz now, right? And I think it's funny because a lot of people I meet now that are really respected or like that I really look up to, they're like, they're just trying to wrap their head around it. Like, so what's up? What's this guy's deal? You know? And it's like, the deal is just taking every tour, every chance, every opportunity and really just leaving the whatever. Yeah. Let's just go.
The thing that's cool too is like, and I'm saying this from being with you for weeks on end, you're legit a nice guy, very charismatic, and you're just happy to be there, which is such a great attitude to have, you know?
So happy to be in 2019, rolling down the road in a tour bus with Chris Jericho and Fozzy, kicking ass every night.
Yeah.
You know, like to me, like this is priceless. Like we've talked about this too, but like at the end of the day, it's not a money. It's none of that. This is for the love of what we're doing.
If you enjoy what you do and you're good at it and you're doing it for the right reasons, you'll make the money. That will come.
Yep.
You know, it's already coming. But if you're doing it for the money, it never goes that way.
100%, man. And you know, we talk about it all the time. But all the guys that we look up to, you know, it's like, I am just so happy, like I say, to be playing blues, rock and roll, and to be kicking ass on a guitar every single night around the world.
He toured with a couple of new wave British heavy metal legends, UFO, and of course, our old friends in Saxon. We love Biff, Talk Is Jericho alumni. Let's talk about those experiences. But first, I want to talk about all the great experiences I've had with Diamond Dallas Page and his DDPY program. DDP and the DDPY have been changing lives for years. You know what they did for me and my back? It's why I'm still in the ring at the highest of levels. Was able to beat Tanahashi at Wrestle Kingdom 14 over the weekend. Had one of the best matches on the show. And it's why I'm going to be doing three sets with Fozzy on the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at C Part 2 in a couple weeks. Big rehearsals in Atlanta next week. DDPY can do the same thing for you. It can get you on the path to healthier living and keep you there. Alleviate any chronic pains or soreness you might be suffering from. It can completely help your mental well-being as well. It's all connected, people. Your mind and your body, they work together to keep you healthy and active. So take care of both your mental and physical selves with one program, DDPY. And it's not just for athletes either. DDPY works for everyone, no matter your age or your skill level. And Dallas has made it super easy to try for yourself thanks to the DDPY Now app. The app is everything you need to keep on track. DDP himself is on there to help you stay focused on your goals and to help you map out the workouts that are best for you. You can connect a Bluetooth heart rate monitor to the app to keep track of your workout data and calories burned. You can get the app to stream to your TV so that you can do the workouts on your big screen. I've got the app on my phone. I just open it up, choose the workout, and get going. And now you can try DDPY for free for 7 days. Just go to ddpy.com to get started. See what Dallas and DDPY can do for you. Take advantage of the free 7-day trial at ddpy.com. Let Dallas and DDPY change your life. Start today, ddpy.com. Get in the best physical and mental shape of your life and go do it now.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about a couple of the tours. How was it for you touring with like two new wave of British heavy metal legends, the UFO and Saxon? How did that audience take you?
They loved it.
Yeah.
They loved it. You know, having the Shanker lineage and having the Saxon, all that stuff.
Good point, yeah.
They loved it. I would go out there. This is the best part about my life, is most people are like, who is this guy? You know, and rightfully so. And they show up, arms crossed.
Low expectations, show. Yeah.
Yeah, and they go, what's this kid gonna do, you know? And every night I go out there swinging. And at those shows especially, because it was usually, it was me, Saxon, UFO. So Saxon would go out there and annihilate.
Heavy, great live band.
Heavy, yeah. Great live. They killed it every night. So we would go out there right before them. And I was like, this is my duty to go out there just swinging, flame throwing with the guitar, you know?
Yeah.
And it was excellent, man. There's so many, and the best part is, like, even on this tour, I have people, first time I saw you was with UFO and Saxon, you know? And it's like, that's the thing too, the fans, the people that really love this like we do, lifers, you know? But, I mean, hanging out with Biff and those guys, classic, dude. Those guys are hilarious.
Classic ball busters and...
Classic.
You're dealing with guys that have been on the road for 40 years. You know, they got to keep themselves entertained.
But they must laugh when they see a guy like me that's all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, like, hey guys. Biff's like, oh, this is an easy target. It's great.
But I mean, and then you're talking about, you know, Vinnie Moore and like and Paul Quinn, very underrated guitar player. To go in there knowing that you got some shredders, but you're, once again, you're different.
Yeah, and hanging out with Vinnie Moore. Vinnie was funny. He would always bust my balls. He'd go, just keep making those faces. You know, he's like, they're just watching your face anyways, you know. But I've been so lucky, dude, to be surrounded by so many great guitar players. Vinnie Moore, Paul Quinn, Zach, touring with like John Five. And
how was it touring with Zach? How did you get that gig?
So that was hilarious. So going back to the Skinner stuff, there's this company called Uproxx. And they were making like mini series documentaries, and Honda was one of the sponsors.
It's a website, right?
Yeah, website. Yeah, yeah. So they made this mini documentary about me in 2015 about like the struggle. It was like us in a van going to Austin to play for no one, and then like the triumphant jamming with Skinner. And it was real. It was like a real part of my life.
Right.
And Zach's manager, so this came out on like a Monday at 9 a.m. I get a text. Hey, your video's live. Dude, then like the first hour, it had like 100,000 views. And then I kept refreshing it and it kept going up. And I think it ended up getting almost like 10 million hits.
Damn.
And it was amazing. But I remember the next morning, like me and my girlfriend, Amanda, we were watching it. We were like reeling. We were like, this is crazy. Like kept refreshing it. Like my Facebook would kept getting more Facebook and all this stuff. And the next morning I get a call. Hey man, this is Zach Wilde. His manager, Blasco, saw that video and forwarded it to Zach. And they were like, man, this guy would be great for Zach's upcoming 6-month tour for Book of Shadows 2.
Gotcha.
And he straight up called and he was like, hey man, it's pretty awesome. Yeah, we'd love to have you on this tour. And I was like, yeah, like, yeah. So that was insane. We started in England in the beginning of April and it ended in August in LA.
Was he doing like an acoustic thing for that?
It was like an acoustic electric thing. It was like, I would say it was full band, but it was rocking, but it was more on like the Zach Book of Shadows, like that acoustic rock,
sure,
which I love. And it was amazing, dude. I remember right when I met Zach, we were in London, got off the plane, went straight to the venue. And all of a sudden I hear boom, 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 you know, and he walks up, he's like, hey man, what's up? Glad you're here. And I was like, fuck, dude, Zach Wilde. You know, I remember being at Ozfest like 12 years old watching Zach. And when we go for sound check, I hear the boots again. And they're like, we're ready for guitar. And he's just waiting, arms crossed, waiting to hear me play. Like, what's this kid got? And then we're doing our set. And lo and behold, dude, I see someone behind the amps with their phone. He's filming me. And I was like, oh, what is happening? You know? And we had a really good time, man. Zach totally took me under his wing. He hooked me up with a bunch of guitars and all this crazy stuff. Like, yeah, it was an experience I'd never forget.
So now when you have, you know, we're talking about these tours and all this stuff. So what's kind of coming up for you? Like, you're, because now you're building your brand. Now you're not the bushy-eyed, you know, young guy.
Oh, for sure.
Like, now you actually have a little bit of blues power behind you.
I got the blues power behind me. What's next? Making a really kick-ass record for me. Songs. Songs. Making, because that's the thing that we love, you know. I'm fairly confident now. Well, obviously because I'm crazy too. I will tour until I can. Great. But I really want to have the right material, the right songs. And like we all do, you know, I just want
great songs, man. So I'm really focusing on that for the next record and just building the brand, you know, like playing kick ass blues rock and roll and taking all that music that I love, the Stevie's, like all of that, and just continuing it now. Mm. Because that's the thing, I look around, there's not a lot of guys that are ready to put it all out on the table. And it's like, for me now, we're going on like 3.5-4 years of solid touring and finally starting to get that, the wheels turning. Now I want to push harder. Mm. You know, great record, just keep touring and keep building the brand, man. Bigger, stronger, faster.
Because when you look at like someone like Bonamassa, who you mm-hmm. mentioned, he's really got a down pat of kind of building this whole empire, yeah. where the majority of people are like, who the hell is this guy?
100%.
But he's thousands of fans that show up to every gig that he plays, know exactly who he is, and spend a lot of money on him.
See, that's the crazy part too. And a lot of people say, well, who's your label? Who do you have doing this for you? The reality is me. Like, I'm doing it. My manager's doing it. My bandmates on the road. That's it. We have...
Are you on a agent. Label?
No label right now.
So you just put out the records?
Yeah, we did our first two records. We had a small deal with a French label called Listenable. And that was awesome. That was great. And now we have no label. We're putting out music on iTunes and, you know, it's amazing. Buying CDs, doing it the old-fashioned way.
Gotcha.
You know?
But even CDs at this point, it's almost irrelevant. You know,
it really
I mean?
Is. It's like
if you're streaming in digital and on iTunes mm-hmm. and on Spotify, then yep. you got a record deal.
And that's it. And I think that a lot of people, they don't understand that it's still in this world, if you want something done, you just do it yourself, right? Mm. And it fascinates people. Like, I was with Joe, and he goes, first thing he asked me the other day, so how many shows have you done this year? And I was like, geez, if you count it up, probably around about 275.
This, like in 2019?
Yeah.
How many days has there been?
290? Not even.
90?
Dude, literally almost every single day, show, a clinic, something, almost every single day. And that's the way we're going to build it. You know what I mean? That's the way I see it. And then if the time ever comes where someone else could come in to help and, you know, but... It's like you built your empire. You built it, you know, mm-hmm. it's you.
Right,
and,
right.
And I take pride in that, man. And, you know, we just keep cooking it, man.
Yeah, well, that's great. When you're talking about some of the, like you mentioned some of your influences, who else is there besides Stevie Ray?
Oh my goodness. So like all the blues guys, right? All those blues guitar players, like obviously like B.B. King, Albert King, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, like all that stuff, of course. But then... You know, going the other side, Eddie, Dimebag, you know, I mean, I grew up listening to like Metallica, you know, like all those guys, mm-hmm. huge influences. Anyone that means it when they play, anyone that puts it all out, you know, that's my stuff. And like, I even have like, you know, influences that people probably wouldn't even think about, but like, you know, old country stuff. And, you know, I listen to everything, man.
Like some of those country guys are pretty badass. We went to the Grand Ole Opry last year and Ricky Skaggs was playing. And it's like, holy shit. Guy was amazing.
Those guys are no joke.
Yeah.
Talk about playing for real. I just moved to Nashville from LA.
Wow.
And it's funny though. We moved. I was there for 3 days and I came to hook up with you guys.
Yeah.
But we went out the first night and it was like 4:30. We were at Robert's Western World, 4:30 on a Sunday. And then some guy walks in and I'm watching him and he pulls out his telly out of his bag and he starts playing and he smokes it. And I'm like, look at this guy. First guitar player I see moving to town and he's killing it on a telly. You know, all the old honky tonk stuff. Man, those country guys are no joke.
Yeah, when you go to Nashville and you hang out on any of that street, whatever this big street is there.
Broadway.
And then you walk into, like you said, a club. I text Rich when he was there. I said, every musician in this place, we should be carrying their gear.
Seriously.
Like, they're all just killers. Girls and guys alike.
Killers. You know, but then I ask, if I talk to them, I'm like, so do you tour? They're like, nope, this is where we play. You
yeah.
know?
So that's their...
It's a total different world.
When you talk about the old blues guys as we start to wind down here, it's almost like the cliche, like Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters. What is it about those guys that are so... Like, I'm not... My definition of blues is Stevie Ray and Jimmy and those guys.
Yeah.
Going back further, I just never got to that point.
Yeah.
I know the Stones, like Keith Richards loves those guys.
Right,
what is it about those guys that you love as well as a young guy?
what I think it is it's obviously way, way, way before any of my time or your time or anything, but
right.
It's the honesty. It's the reality. Like, to those guys, they were creating it firsthand. Like, there's an old saying, Muddy Waters invented electricity, you know, because he was the first guy to put a Telecaster into an amp and play blues. Like, he was one of the first pioneers of that sound. To me, when I hear that old blues stuff, it's like the art form is so, like, and it sounds cheesy, it's so soulful. And it's like, when you hear those guys play, even if it's out of tune, beat up on the cheapest guitar in the world, they're still putting everything they got into it. And when I listen to like Albert King or BB King or any of those guys, you know, the next era, they're the guys that directly influenced Jeff Beck, Hendrix. You know, that's the, you know, digging deeper. When I remember when I got into Hendrix and I heard him play Catfish Blues, I was like, what is this song? And I look back, I'm like, oh, that's a Muddy Waters song. And then I listened to Muddy play and I was like, oh, this is like the caveman version of that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And not in a bad way, but you know, you hear the roots of where that came from. And, you know, digging deeper into Muddy, it was like, that music is so deep and it's so soulful. I don't know how to explain it, man. But when I hear it, it's just like,
you feel it.
I feel it.
Yeah.
I feel it. And it's something that is now, you know, I think that we can only listen back because that whole era of blues, that's gone. You know, that's right. It's gone.
You know, it's a great clip of the Stones, probably, I don't know, 1965 maybe. And they played like, well, let's say the Ed Sullivan Show or whatever it was. And then Muddy Waters played it and the Stones were all sitting like on the stage, clapping along while he was playing. Obviously they used their influence to get him on.
Right.
Now here we are in 2019. The Stones are now an old blues band.
Yeah, dude.
You know, obviously they're more than that, but like they've become the new version of, like you said, this last link to the old blues.
It's true.
You know, you would be great opening for the Stones because they have different guys in every city.
Yep.
That you would just fit right in with that crowd.
And I think that that's so important in that, like, they are the last link.
Yeah.
And it's like every time one of our heroes or these legends go down, so is a direct
piece of history. Yes.
So it is, it's kind of heavy when you think of it like that. But I mean, yeah, it's like my fascination with Clapton. It's like, I've never met him, but he's another one of those guys. It's like one of the links. And I remember I got to meet Johnny Winter and I've met Trower and I've met Leslie West and all these other guys. But like, you know, some of these guys like Keith and Mick and, you know, even Steven and all these guys, they're the last link. So it's very important.
Oh yeah. We even talk about Clapton because he's not playing anymore, right? He has to stop.
He doesn't. They just did Crossroads, the big festival. But yeah, as far as I know, he's not playing much anymore.
Yeah, I saw him and actually Adrian Smith from Iron Maiden videoed it, Clapton and Frampton on stage together, because Frampton's on his last tour as well.
Dude, I jammed with Frampton in January.
No kidding.
And Billy Gibbons.
What? Where?
In Anaheim. There was a big Gibson event. Yeah. They had a big Gibson event. And I remember I walk on stage and Billy Gibbons is staring in the line of sight. And then at the other end of the stage is Peter Frampton with his three pickup Les Paul. And he gives me a bow like, hello. And I just said, all right, I'm good, man.
that pretty forgot about ZZ Top being a great three-piece blues band. Billy must have loved you too.
Billy was great.
Yeah.
It was great. It's always funny though, when I play for some of these guys, you know, because to me, it's like I've been such a disciple of all this stuff. And then all of a sudden there's Billy Gibbons watching me play. I'm like, man, I wonder if he likes it. But obviously he did, and that's all that matters.
That's all that matters. So for the rest of the year, what do you do after this tour now?
First time ever to China and Japan.
And tell me about that a bit. Like,
yeah.
That's a hard nut to break as well. Is that another American blues guy comes to town?
Yeah, there's that whole side of it. And then there's the guitar side with like Gibson and Blackstar, the amps that I use. There's a huge music show in China and they're flying me there to play. So like, that's my first entrance. And then while we're over there, we hooked up with a few gigs in Japan. So I don't know what to expect, man, but I'm excited.
You mentioned having your own model, signature model with Gibson. That's huge.
Oh man, huge. Big milestone, like a big, I remember that was when I called my parents And I was like, hey, I'm getting my own guitar. They're like, what do you mean? I was like, they're making me a signature guitar. It's really cool, man.
How does that work? Are you involved like in the specifics of it? Like,
yeah.
What's different about your Gibson than another Gibson?
So the cool part is it's based on a guitar that I had already been playing. The big difference is it's a standard black Les Paul custom, but I modded it. Like I took pieces off, you know, because I was playing with my fingers and doing different stuff. So it only has one pickup, whereas most have two or three. And people started seeing that and they're like, what's up with this guitar, you know? And it grew and grew to the point where Gibson was getting calls weekly. Hey, can I order a guitar like Jared's? And they're like, what's up with this guy? And I remember it was last summer. I was at the NAMM show and they said, we want to make your guitar. And I said, what do you mean? Like, make a few? Like, no, we want to make you a signature model. And to me, I only see those for like the real guys.
Yeah.
Like, yet again, I feel like I got pretty damn lucky.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not Joe Perry. I'm not Slash. But they saw enough in what I'm doing and the hard work and the growth to say maybe we'll give this guy a model, which is
but
crazy.
They need a guy like you, though, in this day and age, like you mentioned, because every generation has, and like you said, I know you're very humble and you're not there yet, but you're definitely on the way to be the Stevie Ray, the Hendrix, the Clapton. You need this,
yes.
Especially guitar companies, because so many kids aren't playing guitar anymore.
For sure.
You know what I mean? It's like they're playing video games or going to DJ sets and all this stuff. So a guy like you to come out who's still, what are you, 30?
30.
I mean, that's, you've appealed to that demographic.
Yeah, man. So I'm just really honored, dude.
Yeah.
And I want to, you know, do everything I can to keep what we love and what I love, you know, in the forefront as much as possible and just keep killing it.
Last couple questions for you. When you talk about Steve Ray Vaughan, what do you feel is his best solo?
Oof. Now we're going deep.
Yeah. He's got so many, you know?
So many. Like,
what are some of your favorites?
Well, like, the thing about Stevie was a lot of people peg him as just a straight blues guy, but then you listen to like Lenny.
Yeah.
Right. Or like Riviera Paradise, these crazy soulful, almost jazzy.
Right.
You know, like listening to Lenny, anything off El Macambo, but listening to Lenny, that's one of my favorites. Obviously Texas Flood. Texas Flood is like, it's like a standard, like, you know, when you hear that or when I would hear some of the craziest stuff was like Rude Mood, which was an instrumental, really fast instrumental. He just had it all.
He had such great pop sensibilities too. He's a lot like Rush in that you don't take your girl to a Rush show because it's like, oh my God, they don't get it. But then you put on, you know, Limelight and everyone likes it. Stevie had Cold Shot and he had,
exactly,
you know, all those type of tunes. You could put it on and you're like, wow, this is really, really cool pop songs.
And there's a lot of guitar players that like only appeal to guitar players. Stevie had the sense of,
yeah, and you have to appeal to everybody,
yep,
if you really want to get to that next level.
For sure, right? Man. That's the tough question, though. I mean, when he did Voodoo Child,
oh,
or that, like
Little Wing,
all that stuff, dude.
Yeah. And then you still got the Houses of Rockin', like all those type of tunes, Crossfire, like those are radio songs.
When I listen to Stevie now, it's like he's one of the rare guys. When I hear it, I hear different stuff every time too. You know, he's a deep player, man.
Yeah.
It's great.
And last question, what's your favorite song to play live?
Oof.
Of your tunes?
Of my tunes? We got this new song, Nails in the Coffin.
Great song.
Different.
Super blues.
Super bluesy. Yeah.
Slow. But heavy.
Usually, when I go out on stage, it's like a boxing match, right? I'm trying to hit everybody really hard. But then once we get to that tune in the set, it's like the weight, you know, it's heavy, like we said. It's slower. There's a lot more dynamic. That's probably one of my favorites to play. Otherwise, you know, I love just tearing it up. Honey, Forgive Me.
I like that tune.
Yeah.
I actually did a takeover in Tucson, and they said, pick four songs. I played that one.
Thank
one
you, brother.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So, you know, I have tunnel vision. I don't know about you, but I get tunnel vision on stage, man, where I get so into it, you know. I love playing all the stuff, but those are probably my favorite too.
Awesome, man. Well, it's awesome to have you. I'm excited that you're going to be on the cruise.
Oh,
keep
dude,
the party
we didn't even
going.
Talk about it. The
oh,
cruise.
Yeah? This is your first cruise?
Yeah, it's my second. We did Monsters of Rock,
okay,
which was great, but I already know after hanging with you and just being in the environment, I'm in for the cruise of a lifetime, dude. It's going to be amazing.
We had a blast in Vegas at the after party.
Absolutely, great, we did. Yeah.
That's what I like, too. You actually like to have a couple of drinks. A lot of guys don't nowadays, so.
I love to have a good time all the time.
Yeah, have a good time all the
That's
time.
That's it, man.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you, brother.
All right, man.
The Westwood One Podcast Network.